have an active shooter. We have an active shooter.
Let's go ahead and declare this a mass casualty.
Welcome to Active Shooter, a podcast that covers the whys, the hows, and the aftermath of active shooter and mass casualty events.
They have an active shooter in the building. A second call says they are being attacked.
I've been shot.
16910, means we got shots fired at 415 AS. Route 91, sounded like an automatic firearm.
Active shooter, reports of an active shooter, active shooter,
active shooter of mass casualty incidents.
Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Active Shooter, a podcast that may contain adult themes, explicit language, and graphic depictions of violence. Portions of this show may be traumatic for those under 18. Listener discretion is advised.
At least 8 people are dead and 11 or more injured in Lower Manhattan today after a rented pickup truck plowed into a busy bicycle path. The incident happened a few blocks away from the World Trade Center Memorial site. The New York City Police Department reported that a 29-year-old male suspect was taken into custody. Mayor Bill de Blasio said they were increasing security in the area, and he urged people to be vigilant.
The Active Shooter podcast has undergone subtle changes in the layout in which cases are presented. Our commitment to bringing listeners the full story with accurate facts has always remained the same. In keeping with our mission to not name the shooter or attacker, so as to never give them more notoriety than the people whose lives were senselessly taken too soon, the Active Shooter podcast will remain steadfast in our duty to honor the victims, survivors, witnesses, and first responders above all, when retelling these devastating acts of violence and hate. The attack we will be covering today in New York City is tremendously different from the majority of the cases we've covered. Most notably, the New York City truck attack was not a shooting, but rather another type of terrorist attack where the assailant used a moving vehicle, specifically a Ford Super Duty truck, to murder as many unsuspecting people as possible. The assault was the deadliest ambush on the city since September 11th. 8 people were brutally murdered, 11 others were injured, and an entire city reverberated with an overwhelming sense of loss and trauma that hadn't been felt in some time. Today's case is dedicated to the lives and memories of Nicholas Claves, Anne Laurie Decott, Darren Drake, Diego Enrique Angelini, Alejandro Damian Pagnuco, Ariel Erlich, Hernan Diego Mendoza, and Hernan Ferrucci.
Active Shooter, the podcast, is a High Five Holly production. And I'm your host, JT. If you've listened to our prior episodes, you know that the Active Shooter podcast team has taken the No Notoriety Pledge, and we will not be sharing the real name of the shooters that we cover. We will be giving the shooters a pseudonym and refer to them by that name throughout the episode. This will help in clearing up any confusion in the story, while remaining true to our pledge in not naming the shooter by their actual name.
We will refer to today's attacker as Henry. Tuesday, October 31st, 2017, began as a typical fall day in Manhattan, New York City. It was sunny with blue skies, yet windy, with temperatures dipping into the brisk mid-50s. Running parallel to West Street was the Hudson River Greenway, which is a protected bike lane in the Hudson River Park. The Greenway was busy, as it usually was, filled with bikers and pedestrians alike. Not a single individual was prepared for the ghastly, confusing attack that was to befall with little to no warning. Elsewhere, in Passaic, New Jersey, 29-year-old Henry was busy checking items off his murder to-do list. At 2:06 p.m., he rented a Ford Super Duty pickup truck from a Home Depot. From there, he traveled towards the city. He crossed the George Washington Bridge and into Manhattan proper by 2:43 p.m. and cruised down the West Side Highway. At approximately 3:04, Henry diverged from the main road onto the Hudson River Greenway path, where he accelerated and used his massive heavy-duty truck as a murder weapon, intent on destroying everything in his path. He was immediately successful, striking several individuals, both on bicycle and on foot. The majority of the victims and survivors were on bikes when they were hit, including 23-year-old Nicholas Cleves. Nicholas was biking when he saw, much too late, a Home Depot rental truck driven by a bearded man wearing dark clothing, speeding towards him. He biked the Greenway often. It was only two blocks from Nicholas's apartment at the Archive, located in the West Village. The only child born in America to immigrant parents, Nicholas lived with his mother at the time of the attack. He attended the Little Red Schoolhouse and Elizabeth Irwin High School, both of which were part of the LREI school district. A 2012 high school graduate, Nicholas attended Skidmore College, where he majored in computer science and minored in physics. He was an avid learner and even studied Italian during his college years, and helped earn his way through school by working at the college's IT help desk and even tutoring in astronomy. Nicholas interned at Unified Digital during his senior year in 2016, and was eventually hired as a full-time analyst, software engineer, and web developer, and was well on his way to a prosperous career before his life was ended tragically short. The kind, humorous young man will be deeply missed by so many friends and family who describe Nicholas as thoughtful, inquisitive, and an all-around wonderful guy. After crashing into several people, Henry continued along the bike path, ramming into cyclists. He crashed into 31-year-old Anne-Laurie Ducat, a Belgian mother of two boys, a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old. Anne-Laurie was traveling by bike with her mother and two sisters when she was suddenly struck from behind, never even realizing what hit her. Her travel companions were each left unharmed, though considering the survivors of the group were her mother and sisters, it's unlikely they were left any less hurt. Their injuries were sustained in a much different way. The sweet woman, who was described as a fabulous mother, didn't stand a chance against her attacker, and the sudden loss must be cataclysmic to her family and loved ones. A witness, Tom Kendrick, was outdoors, jogging near Chambers Street, when he began to hear screams and crashing. It was instantly apparent that something disastrous was taking place. As he rushed towards the chaos, Tom began seeing bodies lining the path. Near so many of those motionless bodies were bicycles, pulverized into a heap of metal pieces and wheels. Wanting and trying to help, Tom lent a hand as best he could, despite the bloody and gruesome scene. People were sprinting to and fro, panic-stricken and unsure of where to go, what to do, or what was really even happening.
Mangled. One gentleman's leg was hanging by skin. The other gentleman had tire marks going across his chest.
Another of the cyclists that were killed was 32-year-old Darren Drake, an only child born to Barbara and Jimmy Drake. Darren was passionate about education and, as such, dedicated much of his 20s to learning and higher education. He served as New Milford School Board president in his 20s while attending classes, which began at Rutgers University for his undergraduate degree. Darren earned his master's degree at Fairleigh Dickinson and was even pursuing a second master's degree when he was brutally murdered. He was working as a project manager for Moody's Analytics, and he was out on the Greenway that afternoon biking between meetings. Such an ordinary act on what should have been an ordinary day. in honor of their son, Darren's folks, established the Darren Drake Act, which is intended to, quote, increase reporting of suspicious behavior at rental vehicle facilities and enhance the working relationship between rental vehicle providers and law enforcement to prevent vehicular terrorist attacks. The Act, which awarded scholarships to high school students wishing to attend a trade school, officially became a law on September 14, 2021, and is an extraordinary way to honor a man who was so beloved.
Another 53 pedestrian hit at West Street and Chambers. West Street and Chambers.
What? Shot fired. Central. We have one in custody. Shot. We need multiple buses over here. Central. Be advised. We have multiple people on the ground from Chambers all the way up to Houston. All the way from Houston to Chambers. There's multiple people on the ground, Central. We need buses from Houston all the way down to Chambers. I got four or five people on the ground.
We got multiple casualties. This is a mass casualty situation here.
Henry drove 20 blocks in all, and that meant 20 blocks of intense madness where witnesses reported hearing sounds like an engine roaring and a terrible grinding noise. Your eyes could see this unfolding before you, but sometimes it takes the mind a few beats to catch up and process that what you think you're seeing is actually real. Having but mere seconds to see, process, and respond to such a situation is the most dreadful scenario any person could find themselves in. What types of training exercises could be done to prepare for this kind of attack? Five of the individuals that were murdered were Argentine nationals, aged between 48 and 49 years old, who were part of a larger group that was celebrating their high school reunion. Unfortunately, research produced very little information about these victims. But what we do know about Hernan Ferrucci, Ariel Arledge, Alejandro Damian Pagnuco, Diego Enrique Angelini, and Hernan Diego Mendoza is that the five men were all friends since attending a polytechnic high school in Rosario, Argentina. They graduated in 1987 and were in New York celebrating their 30-year reunion, along with five others. Five of the 10 were murdered. Four were unharmed, and one, Martin Ludovico Maro, was injured but survived. The group worked individually as businessmen and architects and were delighted about their celebratory trip to New York. Ariel Arledge, a successful businessman that owned a company called Avanar S.A., which distributed steel products, had organized the trip. Ariel was so eager for the trip among lifelong friends that he even paid for two of them to attend, because he didn't want anyone to miss out. The entire city of Rosario mourned the incomprehensible loss of so many of their own. By declaring 3 days of mourning and lowering all flags in the city to be flown at half-mast, a candlelight vigil was held at the high school the group graduated from, which is a beautiful demonstration of love, unity, and the coming together to honor their own. As Henry rapidly approached the corner of Chambers Street and West Street, near the Stuyvesant High School, he came to a stop after smashing a small school bus. The truck Henry drove reached speeds upwards of 66 miles per hour before careening into the bus full of special needs students.
Can you call 911? Oh my God! Okay, I need an ambulance right here! Right here!
Four people on the bus, two adults and two children, were injured, but everyone survived their physical injuries. Henry jumped out of the truck carrying what appeared to be two handguns, screamed, quote, "God is great" in Arabic, and started running. Henry was immediately shot by New York police officer Ryan Nash in the abdomen. In those incredibly tense moments, police didn't know that the firearms Henry carried were actually a paintball gun and a pellet gun. He was rushed to Bellevue Hospital for emergency treatment, though he was ultimately released into police custody.
Say something along the lines of, he has a gun, he has a gun. So at that point, I turned around, but maybe 30 seconds later, I hear somewhere between 5 and 10 gunshots, just one after another, and that's when I got interested, so I turned around to see what happened. When I walked up to it, the first thing I saw was a man laying on the ground, face down in the middle of the street. He was surrounded by police officers. It appeared that he was injured, and right next to him was a man who was being arrested. He wasn't putting up a fight. He was on his knees, hands behind his head. And then right next to that was the pickup truck, the white pickup truck. It had Home Depot logos on it, and the front was completely smashed in, and there was some smoke coming out of it. While all this is happening, I hear an officer yell that there is another suspect who ran into the park. So at that point, at least 5 officers ran towards that and trying to find him, while the other police officers gathered everyone who was around up and made us go across the street just to keep us safe.
Henry waived Miranda and agreed to speak with the police, and the earnestness in which he described the attack and murder of innocent citizens was unsettling and downright shocking. During the police interview, Henry claimed that he specifically chose Halloween as the date of the attack because he believed that more people would be out and about, especially at that particular time of afternoon. He further elaborated that on October 22nd, he'd done a sort of dry run before the real thing. Most disturbingly, Henry admitted he was planning the attack for at least a year and, quote, felt good about what he'd done, and then went so far as to ask to hang the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL, flag in his hospital room, as if such a request would be granted without even a second thought. When police searched the truck, a handwritten note in Arabic was discovered. Translated, it read, quote, "No God, but God and Muhammad is his prophet," and, quote, "Islamic supplication, it will endure." An ISIL flag was also found in the truck, along with a document that seemed to suggest Henry had pledged his allegiance to ISIL. Henry was denied bond at his arraignment, where he was charged with, quote, "providing support to a terrorist organization and violence of destruction of a motor vehicle resulting in death." On November 17, 2017, the charges were enhanced to include 8 counts of murder in aid of racketeering, 12 counts of attempted murder in aid of racketeering, 1 count of providing and attempting to provide material support to the Islamic State, and 1 count of violence and destruction of a motor vehicle resulting in death. The federal death penalty trial commenced on January 9, 2023, and the media and public were barred from the courtroom or attending the trial in person. The decision was reached to ensure that each of the victim's family members could attend the trial. The same courtesy was extended to the defendant, thereby allowing only the victim's family, or representatives, the defendant's family, and the parties to be present before the judge, court, and jury. Henry wore headphones throughout the trial, which allowed him to hear proceedings translated into his language. The defense didn't present much of a case, and in fact didn't even dispute that Henry committed the attack, but rather disagreed on the motive. Henry's attorneys stated, quote, "It wasn't an accident, he did it intentionally," and that he, quote, "had no real connection to ISIL, the organization, other than being on the receiving end of messaging. He did it because he had become immersed in ISIL messaging online. He had become convinced it was a religious obligation for him to commit a martyrdom attack to avenge the killings of Muslims around the world. And as we sit here today, he still believes that." On January 26, 2023, the jury unanimously voted to convict Henry of all charges. However, they were unable to all agree on the death penalty aspect, resulting in Henry being sentenced to 8 consecutive life sentences, 2 concurrent life sentences, and a consecutive sentence of 260 years in prison. Henry will never see the light of day outside the prison walls where he belongs. For their part, prosecutors argued that had Henry not crashed into the school bus, he would have continued the murderer's path onto the Brooklyn Bridge. They further alleged that Henry had rented a truck 9 days before the attack so he could, quote, "practice making turns with the truck in advance of his attack."
We have been covering this case. It took about 6 hours of deliberations over 2 days. The jurors sending back several notes to the judge asking for clarification, which led some people to believe that there was some confusion, but there was no confusion with this verdict today. He was found guilty on all charges, and those jurors were polled. So again, this was a unanimous decision. Now, what they were trying to do in court was say that he was not trying to do this terror attack in an effort to join ISIS. His defense said that he wanted to die a martyr. The prosecutors say, though, that he did this intentionally on Halloween when he knew people would be out on that bike path, and that the attack only ended when he crashed into a school bus, that is, and that there would have been more carnage, that he would have hurt more people on the Brooklyn Bridge. And there was no visible reaction from him in the courtroom as he was wearing a mask, but he did hold his head down as that verdict was read. He was also convicted of providing material support to ISIS with the death resulting. The defense called no witnesses in the case. The jurors, though, were told that they need to keep quiet because they will be brought back to this courtroom February 6th or a little bit later for the next phase of this. And this is where they're going to be deciding whether or not he should face the death penalty. But again, a guilty verdict in a terror attack that we have been following for several years.
Henry was born on February 8th, 1988, in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, which was then a part of the Soviet Union. During his early years in Tashkent, Henry's family was prosperous and they practiced traditional Islam, but they never embraced extremism of any kind. The eldest of four children, Henry was raised mainly between the Peltepe and Uchtepe districts in Tashkent, and he graduated from a professional college in 2005. From 2005 through 2009, Henry studied at the Tashkent Financial Institute, which is one of the largest universities in Uzbekistan, before accepting work as an accountant for the Seyokat Hotel in Tashkent. In 2010, Henry entered the United States under a visa called a diversity immigrant visa, which allowed him to become a permanent resident of the U.S. or considered a green card resident after he won what is described as a diversity visa lottery, which is designed to bring immigrants from underrepresented nations to the States. When he entered the U.S., Henry was a successful 22-year-old who seemed to have the world at his fingertips. He flew into Kennedy International Airport in New York City in March of 2010, and it was the very first time he stepped on American soil. Despite arriving in New York, Henry lived in Cincinnati, Ohio initially. He stayed with an Uzbek family who was known to Henry's father. In the beginning, Henry struggled with English, which didn't help him in landing jobs, especially in the hotel industry, where he truly wanted to work. His lack of even rudimentary English made everything a little more difficult for him. So he began to work in the truck driving industry, which required far less verbal communication. The family friend Henry stayed with was a trucker, but he eventually asked Henry to move out because he wasn't contributing financially. Henry did all right for himself despite the hardships and was eventually able to overcome financial burdens, managing to develop his own trucking business, while also securing his own apartment in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, towards the end of 2011. Only a year after arriving in the United States, Henry launched his own company, and 2 years after that, he started another trucking company that was registered as a business in Cuyahoga Falls, near Cleveland. Around the same time he was building his business, Henry met and fell in love with his wife. The couple married in Ohio in 2013 when she was only 19 and he was nearly 6 years older, though she too was from Uzbekistan. Henry's wife initially came to the U.S. by way of Las Vegas before winding up in Ohio. After the couple married, they moved to Tampa, Florida towards the end of 2015. By that time, Henry was no longer financially secure, having run through his money after the businesses failed. Perhaps it was his failures, or perhaps it was just the way he was born, but either way, Henry was short-tempered and quick to anger, displaying violent outbursts. After living in Tampa for a time, they moved to Paterson, New Jersey, where Henry worked as an Uber driver for about 6 months, which was confirmed through Uber's records, that showed Henry logged about 1,400 rides during those 6 months. Along the way, Henry and his wife had three children. First a daughter, then another daughter, and then finally the son Henry so desired. Neighbors in New Jersey described the couple as, quote, mysterious, noting that Henry's wife seldom left the residence, and no one ever came to visit her or their children. Some people that knew the couple say that Henry had a quick temper and it resulted in him being fired from several different driving jobs. On the other hand, he had received at least 9 traffic tickets across 5 different states, including one in Iowa in December 2011 and April 2014, for having a cracked windshield and missing a reflective device. There was a ticket in Nebraska for driving too long without the required rest and carrying a load more than allowed. Some of the tickets were driving-related, so they may have contributed to the loss of some of the driving jobs. Aside from the tickets, Henry had no criminal history, although he was interviewed by the FBI in 2015 due to some contact he had with 2 suspected terrorists. Despite the contact, no file was ever opened on Henry. While some former acquaintances say that Henry was, quote, a little aggressive, another says that Henry was, quote, a very good guy. He was friendly. He's like a little brother. He looked at me like a little brother. Someone he knew in Ohio claimed that Henry was known for getting himself into scuffles and brawls. Yet another said that all Henry did was work. Over the 3 years that Henry lived in Ohio, he became friends, sort of, with a local trucker. Henry didn't seem to ever get particularly close to anyone, but the two men did converse frequently. The friend claims that he saw Henry's attitude progressively deteriorate in a very negative manner. He began growing out his beard but developed a taste for upscale clothing, but it was the anger that concerned his friend. Henry started to curse and become argumentative and disputatious. So much so, his friend became concerned that Henry would get arrested after provoking a fight with a stranger. Some say he wasn't particularly religious, yet he attended a mosque in Tampa enough for a leader there to be able to describe Henry as, quote, devoted to outward observance of Islam and was very critical of American politics regarding Israel. While living in Paterson, New Jersey, Henry lived behind a local mosque where he prayed regularly. In March 2016, he landed a job driving for IIK Transport, based out of Illinois. Things went well for a time until Henry earned himself a ticket for an unknown offense. The ticket went unpaid, causing a warrant to be issued. On October 20th, 2016, he was stopped at a weigh station, as typically happens with semi-trucks, and was subsequently arrested on the warrant and booked into the St. Charles County Jail, where he sat for approximately 40 minutes before being released on a $200 bond that Henry posted for himself. Henry's family, specifically his parents, rarely, if ever, visited him in the States. However, his grandfather came from Uzbekistan on several occasions. It seems Henry yearned for a family connection, so in the spring of 2017, he moved his immediate family to Paterson, New Jersey, to be closer to his wife's family, who lived in Brooklyn. At the time, she was pregnant with their son, who was born that summer. Around the same time, Henry landed a new job driving locally for Uber. Though outward appearances looked like he was happy or even content with his life, Henry was still morose. He confided in his sister that he desired to return to Uzbekistan to live permanently, although she later would say that Henry never spoke ill of the United States. He just missed his home country. What no one seemed to notice, or was willing to admit, was that Henry was becoming increasingly self-radicalized. Claiming that his attack would be made in the name of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, ISIL, which is a jihadist militant group that was fighting in the Iraq and Syrian civil wars. Henry researched and followed the advice he got online for committing a vehicular attack. There doesn't appear to be any one or two things that pushed Henry to the edge. The signs may have been there, but it seems they were hidden quite well, and even though Henry never seemed to be happy, he certainly wasn't ever a part of any FBI or NYPD intelligence investigation, despite having landed on their radar as previously discussed. When his property was searched later, authorities located 90 graphic and vicious propaganda videos on his phone, and a neighbor reported to have recently seen Henry cruise around in a rented Home Depot truck, though it was clear there wasn't any type of construction or building material in the back. Perhaps he was worried someone may catch on to his plans. That much we may never know. However, Henry's neighbors now think he may have moved his family to a new location before carrying out the attack, as no one can recall seeing any of the family members since the weekend before the deadly assault. While we may never know if this attack could have been prevented, this is most definitely a scenario where see something, say something provides a very useful tool in identifying when an attack or shooting will take place. We all have the unique ability to help prevent such a catastrophic event from happening if we keep our eyes and ears open and never hesitate to report when something or someone just doesn't seem right. With the delicate balance of mental health reform, education, active shooter training, and common sense gun laws, we may one day realize the dream that there will be no more active shootings. We pray that love will prevail over hate.
Too many have died! We should say to ourselves, not one more!
In the meantime, we urge our listeners to stay aware of your surroundings and keep in touch with your loved ones. If you see something, say something. You never know how many lives you'll be saving. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Active Shooter, the podcast. Remember, if you see something, say something. There's no telling how many lives you may be saving. A big thank you to Darren Curtis, who composed some of the songs on our show. You can find him online at www.darrencurtismusic.com. Make sure to check us out on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Active Shooter, the podcast, and on Twitter at Podcast Active. Thank you, and be safe.